the Commission. In the panel today with us, we have John Walters, who has been since 2001 until 2009, January. He was the head of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, also known as the Drug Czar. In that role, he had the responsibility of coordinating all the federal drug policies and spending. Thank you for being here. Jose Miguel Insulza, well known, is the Secretary General of the Organization of American States. Before that, he was the Minister of Foreign Affairs of his native Chile, also the Minister of the Interior, and I think the Minister of the Presidency, which is something like the Chief of Staff to the President. And Kevin Casas Zamora is from Costa Rica. He used to be the Minister of Planning of Costa Rica, then and also the Vice President of the country, and now is a Senior Fellow here at Brookings in the Latin American Initiative. And what we plan to do is just to have a very open-ended conversation with the panel, and then as soon as possible engage all of you with your comments and questions. Let me start with you and perhaps ask you for a reaction, your general reaction to the points made by the Commission and by President Gaviria and Cardoso.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I guess, and I've worked with President Gaviria when he was president, and I served in the Elder Bush administration in some of the problems in Colombia, and it's been my pleasure to serve during the period of Plan Colombia. I guess I would start with two points. One, I don't think it's honest to say there isn't a debate about this, and there isn't an open debate or it's taboo. I think that's stretching things beyond what we should just accept here. You start out by mentioning how many publications have raised this issue and want to debate it. I myself, in the last several months, since leaving government, have been interviewed by everybody from the BBC to the Wall Street Journal to the Post to Al Jazeera about the issue of drugs and our policy. This gets debated regularly and often, and I do think that somebody has to take responsibility for if arguments don't move people, maybe you got to look at your arguments. Now, that, of course, is a challenge for the status quo, and I feel like I'm a little bit in the unbelievable situation of explaining why President Obama might not be wrong, which is not exactly my job, but not anymore. But let me just say, I think there also is some remarkable, and we can get into why people want to ignore certain facts, but as Ronald Reagan said, facts are stubborn things. The discussion and the premise on these arguments are just not current. The United States government, as a group, does not arrest users and just throw them into jail. In fact, the criminal justice system today in the United States is the single largest source of entry into the treatment system through drug courts and diversion programs. It takes people who have addictions that are not violent, predatory individuals and try to avoid put them into jail. And it does so quite successfully. Every state has drug courts. They're at multiple levels, juveniles, adults, even family courts for family violence. It's a proud example of using the criminal justice system. During the administration I served in, we expanded the effort to try to use the system to help deal with the disease of addiction by screening in the healthcare system to look at people. This is we take a pulse to see whether you drink or you take drugs and how much, and to get you either counseling or referral to treatment if you need that. Expand this. We have workplace programs. We have programs in the education system that even use testing to help people get help, not to punish. We have a Supreme Court decision that said in the last little while, you can't use testing in school to punish if it's random testing. And now 4,000 schools since President Bush, the elder or the younger, mentioned the federal government would fund this in 2004. I can't go through all the particulars that I think the kind of out-of-date discussion of what we're doing and somewhat cartoon fashion of what is happening here, but let me just also say that if you want to talk about later, maybe Plan Colombia, even the Sunday in the Washington Post thinks Plan Colombia is a success, and they're not exactly some kind of right-wing propaganda mill. And I think it's been a success in multiple dimensions. In fact, for the last 2 years, there have been increasing shortages of cocaine. And to say that Mexico and you can't control drugs Mexico's been a key factor in reducing the meth epidemic. After reducing small toxic labs here, Mexico stopped the production of methamphetamine at its own borders that you don't read about the same kind of problem, 60 to 80% declines in meth use. Overall, U.S. consumption of cocaine has dropped from the peak in the 80s by two-thirds at least. And I also think there's an issue here about kind of coherence in the report, which may explain why President Obama didn't embrace it, I don't know. You can't say that the issue is demand and then say you're going to decriminalize things and you're going to make it so that people give drugs and not expect to make a problem for demand. Fact, I think prevention programs are reviewed. You can read the GAO reports about them, and as among others. We've tried to fix programs like the DARE program that got reviewed badly. But we've had a decline in both workplace drug testing positives of significant amounts across all the drugs of abuse, with the exception of prescription painkillers, which are a different thing to regulate, but is a serious problem. And we've had youth declines that have been quite dramatic. In fact, they're less than half of what they were at the peak in the late 70s. The United States is the only major industrialized country that has those kinds of declines. If you look at, you don't have to believe our numbers, you can look at the UN numbers and look at UNODC. And in fact, UNODC, there's two estimates of production of cocaine in Colombia if you want to talk about Plan Colombia. One is ours. The most dramatic decline, though, is from the UN, which shows even greater declines in the. Now, is there more to do? Of course, there's more to do. But I think if you're going to make policy recommendations, you have to kind of look at the facts and the current facts. Maybe I'm wrong. But I'll leave it there.
Is there anything specific that you would change in the U.S. policy towards drugs? Is there anything that you think deserves to be revised, reviewed, changed?
Yeah, I think that we need the fundamental change in the U.S. and globally is to understand the implications of what we now know from the science that addiction is a disease. That it requires a response that both recognizes that these poisons, while they're initially introduced to people usually voluntarily, they become a compulsion, they become a source of impairment. We do need to treat that on a wider scale. We have to recognize that poor countries have less capacity to treat it, and that we have to control these poisons in our society, and that we can do that. I think that, yes, we need to do a number of things better. I didn't mean to say that we live in the best of all possible worlds for the United States, and I think United States policy has been evolving in terms of using the courts, using the treatment system, going after criminal organizations, targeting them. Colombia is a great example of taking apart criminal organizations that were about to take over the government. I was there in 2002 when we inaugurated, we were there for the inauguration of President Uribe. The FARC fired mortars on the site. That's how close they were to the center of government and challenging the existing institutions. And today, government presence and rule of law spread to all the little over 1,000 municipalities. It's a place people can now move and drive. The major leadership of both the right-wing paramilitaries and the left-wing FARC are largely dead in jail or on the run. And the government has a comparison effectiveness in terms of bringing democracy. I don't think any other country in the world during that period has had the improvement of human rights that Colombia's had. I challenge anyone to find another one that's moved that far. And that's because they brought rule of law and democracy in a way consistent with security and counter-narcotics.
The most successful country in the world in persuading an entire generation to stop an addictive behavior is the United States. Today, we are at a 54-year low in the consumption of tobacco. And there is some evidence that tobacco is more addictive than marijuana. How do you account that the United States has been so successful in eradicating and essentially getting an entire generation not to smoke cigarettes? And the same, we don't see the same performance in marijuana, for example. How do you explain
that? Well, again, if you compare apples to apples, if you look at marijuana rates of consumption by teens, which you're talking about underage smoking, if you look at it and compare it from 1978, 1979, roughly half the level of what you saw in 1979 is what's happening today. So there is a comparison. But secondly, again, the government has done multiple studies on the success of tobacco. And education is very important. No question it's important. But also, almost every one of those studies, when it takes multiple factors, found the single greatest factor, if you want to isolate it, was price for underage smoking. Every time the price of cigarettes went up 10%, underage smoking goes down 7%. We just had a huge increase. We'll see whether this follows. That's contrary to what President Gaviria said about you can't change the price or the availability. In fact, the single greatest factor in that decline for young people is a supply control effort. And an effort, as you see now here, if we were having this meeting 20 years ago, people would be smoking cigarettes. Almost half the audience would be smoking cigarettes. How did that happen? Did we just persuade you? We also criminalized using smoking cigarettes in this room. So, again, the law can work with education. It's not either or, and I think where we've seen the greatest gains, the law does work with education.
Secretary General Gary, you insult
me. He was Secretary General too, yeah.
We have too many Secretary Generals in the room. Secretary General Insulza, you wanted to comment.
Well, yeah, I wanted just to say a couple of things here. I think that there's a false discussion here, a false argument in the Plan Colombia matter. For I heard from President Gaviria, I always told him President when he was Secretary General too. What he said was that the Plan Colombia has been good for Colombia in terms of reducing violence and of rule of law and all those things, and it's true. But that there are also plantations of drugs continue to happen, and probably will continue to happen for some time because the size of the area that can be used for that is so enormous. And by the way, it's an area that also spreads to Ecuador, to Peru, to Brazil, everywhere. So it can happen. I mean, the two things can happen at the same time, and the fact that they have happened at the same time is what leads to a discussion on this matter, because if they can do it there in Colombia or in Ecuador or someplace, then they'll go to Mexico someplace else because it's good business. It's good business because people buy drugs. And that's I very much agree with the initial principle that the reduction of demand is basic in this. I mean, it's like any risky business. The more the reward, the risk. I mean, the riskier the business, the more the reward. So there was always, is there somebody willing to pay for the drugs? Then they'll continue selling them, even if the risks are very high and if they are shooting them everywhere, etc. So they'll go to Mexico, they'll go to Central America, they'll go someplace and continue doing their very lucrative business. That's the first thing I wanted to say. Second, I, as you remember, I was a Minister of Interior in Chile. And and when I was Minister of Interior, we passed new laws on drugs in Chile, and we depenalized the possession for personal use, and we even made some distinctions in the penalization for larger traffickers and smaller traffickers. Actually, I think that it worked, except that the marijuana consumption continued to increase, and because it's very hard, and we used a lot more money for education and for treatment. But the consumption of marijuana continued to rise because, in spite of everything, the money being used for interdiction was so much more than the one being used for treatment or for education. And I think that really that the future here, the possibility is really in education and treatment. I think that there are clear results that show that works. And I'm not saying that you have to interdict, but I agree with the president that just by interdicting you will not get a real solution to the issue of drugs. By the way, I must say that we have a very important area of the OAS, as you know, as President Gaviria knows very well, called the CICAT, the Commission, the Inter-American Commission on Control of Drugs. And in CICAT, we work a lot in these matters of interdiction and education and the health and all that, and training. And I think that the basic problem in our region, in Latin America especially, is the lack of funds for that. We have a lot of funds for interdiction. We get them from abroad, we pay them for, we produce them from our budgets, but we have not really tried the other time. I mean, what I read this report in terms of give the other alternative a chance. Don't stop interdicting. No, you can continue with the repression and all that, but why don't you give a chance to education, to education and to health treatment, and maybe we will find out in a few years if it has been more successful. And I think that the only thing I would comment on the report is that in spite of what it says in a certain paragraph, it looks very much like the European solution, and I think it's a good solution. We're beginning to work with the Europeans, by the way, in CICAD also, and the U.S. government has been willing to, has accepted that possibility of working also with the Europeans in some of their formulas, and we hope that we'll try to extend that, those kind of experiences.
One of the collateral damages of the situation is the staggering number of violent deaths in Latin America. Assassinations have become now a very important part of the challenges that every government in the region is facing. Mm. And is that becoming, do you think, among the countries that in the region, a central theme of the conversation?
Well, it is, yes. But first I should say that we have among our member countries some of the highest rates of homicides in the world. Probably the highest. I'm not really sure about the South of Africa, but we have some of the highest anyway, and much, much beyond the norm. I mean, what's estimated for the world as a whole. We have about 23 or 24 per 100,000, but you have to consider that several countries, especially the southern countries, especially Argentina, Chile, Peru, Uruguay, have very low rates, and then some others, as Canada and even the U.S., have low rates. Some regions, some countries get to as much as 60 or 70 per 100,000, which is epidemic. That's epidemic. Now, that is linked to the drug traffic. It's linked to organized crime. Yes, I think it is very much linked to organized crime, and I think it's only a matter of looking at the statistics and the results. Where does most of the drug activity take place? And when I'm talking about drug activity, I'm talking about processing and trading, not necessarily growing of coca leaves, but rather where they are processed and where they are traded. That is, and it also finances several other criminal activities, drug smuggling and human traffic and so on. So we have a syndrome of criminality in Latin America and the Caribbean, and the Caribbean also. Some countries of the Caribbean have very high rates. Latin America and the Caribbean, and at the center of that is the drug business, not the drug planting. It's the drug business, the drug processing, and the drug trading that's at the heart of this rising criminality.
As President Cardoso said, the Commission insisted that a very important initiative has to be to open the debate, mm-hmm. that there is a taboo, that there is a prohibition to think because it's politically radioactive, despite of the fact that you're right, that in recent months and years, there more and more reports have addressed the issue of what to do with the war on drugs. But still, for a politician, it's very risky, a politician here in the United States, to go out and say that it favors a major revision of the policy on drugs is very risky, and you know that. You know? And so the Washington consensus on drugs rests in two pillars. First, the war on drugs doesn't work. Second, it cannot be changed. 76% of Americans believe that the war on drugs have failed. And a very large number, when you go to them and ask, well, can we change it? No. So it is both the prohibition, it doesn't work, but we cannot change it. And that has to do with the nature of the debate. So the Commission argues that there is a taboo in the debate. There is a prohibition to think widely, broadly, and to bring new perspective into the conversation and revise a policy that many things doesn't work. Secretary General Insulz, you, Mr. Walters, describe, you say, no, there is a debate. There is plenty, you cannot open the newspaper without seeing the point. Secretary General Insulza thinks that it is a false debate. The debate is to continue to interdict, but at the same time start to look at other inhibiting forces and policies.
I mean, if you have a problem and you say we are going to protect those that are sick, I mean, cure those that are sick, Protect the innocent, and give help to the criminals. everything will, everybody will agree. The problem is, has been proved in this case that it's very difficult to do the things, especially to focus on the third thing without taking care of, really taking care of the first two. Yeah, I'm talking about emphasis more than about...
Yes, but the complicating factor is that we don't even agree with the statistics, and we have major differences concerning the statistics.
Well, we have
so
statistics.
One argument says it's a taboo and we cannot even discuss. Mr. Walters argues, of course, we're discussing it constantly. And by the way, it is a cartoonish debate, you called it. You're dealing with slogans and not with the reality of the numbers and the statistics that you cited. And you, Secretary General, said that it is a false debate. What do you?
Well, thank you very much for having me here. I guess it depends where you have the debate, because it is pretty obvious that in places like this, we are having an open debate about this. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't have a full house. But at the level of the political system in this country, I see no evidence whatsoever of anything other than a moral debate. And I think that one of the tragedies of the debates, of the debate on narcotics in this country is that it has become primarily a moral debate, in which any attempt to relax a punitive approach is seen as a sign of irresolution in the face of wickedness. And you know, sure enough, when evil is placed at the center of the discussion, then it becomes totally pointless to argue in terms of the cost and benefits of alternative policy approaches. You know, when evil is the issue at stake, surely no price is too high. And this is frankly absurd, even from the moral standpoint, because it really deserves a thought. How something that has been construed as a moral crusade by so many people in this country can generate so many moral hazards elsewhere. Because the fact of the matter is that the policy framework that stems from turning this into a moral battle is having the consequence of killing a lot of people south of the border. And is having the consequence of creating huge opportunities for the moral degradation of political systems throughout the hemisphere. And it's also, and this is crucial, it's also having the effect of damaging permanently the work ethics of an entire generation in Latin America. So if we're going to talk morals, let's talk morals. But of course, that's what we should not do. And I particularly praise this report for making a call to examine the problem at hand and the ways to deal with it under the light of evidence and the light of reason. And I guess that, you know, this attitude, which should be the staple of policymaking in Western societies, needs to be apparently emphasized with full force in this discussion. And I find, quite frankly, I find that baffling, that at this point we have to emphasize that this is not primarily a moral debate. Because I mean, that's the key problem. I mean, it's not really about the substance of the policies that we embrace. It's about the nature of the debate that we have and the method that we use to arrive to our conclusions. I mean, that's what needs to change. And I have to say that our moderator, Moises Naim, put it very eloquently in the course of the discussions of the Partnership for the Americas Commission last year here at Brookings, when he said precisely that the main task at hand was about abolishing the prohibition to think and to allow ourselves to analyze the problem with the freedom to inquire, to dissent, and to experiment that should be the hallmark of democratic societies.
Would you like to respond to that, Mr. Walters?
Well, I think I already have. I haven't changed my view. Look, let me suggest...
The specific point is about the moral nature of the debate versus the statistical, evidence-based kind of conversation that you bring to the conversation.
Try to advance the discussion by taking this approach rather than... I think the And I don't mean to be abstract here, and I apologize. I'll try to be more vibrant in a minute. But I think the fundamental mistake, aside from whatever ideological differences may be underneath all this, is a what would be called logically a category mistake. And it may be a result of the term war on drugs, which here in the United States started roughly around the time of Nixon and was intended to say we had to elevate our concern about drugs and organize ourselves collectively about the problem because it was more serious than the public understood and it needed more attention and more resources. That has become something else. And I think the drug problem, as we have now seen it and understood it properly, is an education and prevention problem, which has been touched on, a healthcare problem, screening and treatment, a public safety problem with both the violence and problems from trafficking, but also the violence that's been touched on by people under the influence, which is vastly greater, actually, I think the data will show, and national security problems. The problem with the title War on Drugs is we've talked about it in terms of a war which is supposed to be horrible and limited. It's supposed to be, if you don't win it in a certain period of time, then you're not doing something right, and you ought to make peace with honor. But we don't think about that in terms of disease. We don't say that because we spend all this money and time on healthcare that there's still disease, so let's stop doing that. The war on disease is wrong, or the war on ignorance is wrong, or efforts to secure democracy are wrong because we still have more to do. Yes, we can do things that are better, but the frustration and the argument about failure, I think, it necessarily becomes incoherent because it is based on it's not over. It's not going to be over. It can be smaller. It can be better managed, and there may be techniques. But if you want to use, the European example, I would say let's really look at Europe. The lowest rates among the major countries of Europe are in Sweden. It has a lot different policy than the one you're proposing. Even the countries that have had some change, and I know there have been different periods of time and debate over this. Holland was mentioned, the UK, some of the others, take Needle Park in Switzerland. They've experimented and rolled those policies back and are rolling them back in various ways. When I was in office, I spent a lot of time with two Dutch health ministers and justice ministers who were trying to move more coherently. Why? Because they've seen the consequences here. And some of those consequences involve a variety of drugs, some of which you've talked about individually, that they take more seriously because of the current threat. So again, I would say if you stop seeing the moral argument, if you want to ban morality, which I don't think is great from human life, but if you want to ban it as a pollutant in some force, then let's talk about it in terms of health policy and education policy, and it has to go on. And the question is, does decriminalization or the forms you have, does it make prevention better? I don't think anybody thinks that. You brought up cigarettes and alcohol, our effort. You know, the United States, the estimate is maybe, best estimate, 20 million Americans are using illegal drug once a month and more frequently, 7 million of which may be dependent on those drugs of various kinds. 40-plus million smokers, 100-plus million drinkers with the same frequency. What would the country look like if we accelerated that? What would Latin America look like with 100 million drug users?
Let me take, you want to say something quickly, and I want to engage the audience as much, so say something quickly, and then...
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, number one, the problem is not that the policy, that the effort is not over. The problem is that the results are too poor and the cost is too high. It's a totally different, I mean, we know that it has to go on in some way or fashion. I hope not in the same way, because this, for some reason, this discussion strikes me as very similar to the discussion on the Cuban embargo, you know? And the other thing that I want to raise is, I agree with you that war on drugs is a misnomer to some extent. Because the fact of the matter is that as a result of the war on drugs, there's a lot of people are dying. So it is a war, in a way. And here I would like to mention and to go back to the issue of murder rates in Latin America, which is very interesting. I am totally convinced that the fact that Latin America, and in particular the Caribbean basin, has, by some margin, the highest murder rates in the world is certainly related to drug trafficking. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. If you take the figures, the murder figures of Mexico in 2008, they tell a very disturbing story, which is not the one that most people expect. Because the real story in Mexico is not that the homicide rate is going through the roof. In fact, it is not. For Mexico as a country, it barely moved upwards in 2008. The really unsettling fact is that half of the homicides in Mexico are directly related to drug trafficking. And I'm talking here about execution, shot to the head. I can assure you that out of the other half, a lot of them are somehow related to narcotics. So, I mean, just to finish the point, the fact that the Mexican authorities have done this horrific headcount allows us to indulge in an interesting back-of-the-envelope calculation. 140,000 people die every year in Latin America and the Caribbean as a result of crime, right? Let's assume, for the sake of the argument, that not one half, but one fourth of those deaths are related to drug trafficking. I have no way of knowing that for sure, other than Mexico, but in the case of Costa Rica, my country, is a very plausible assumption. So that means that probably 35,000 people, overwhelmingly young men, are dying every year in Latin America as a result of the black market that the current approach to drugs makes inevitable.
Okay, but let me grant that point, but then ask you one simple question. Of all the countries of Latin America that have suffered this, which has had the steepest decline in the last 5 years? We all know the answer. It's Colombia. What were the policies in Colombia? Not the ones you proposed.
I'm not proposing. I mean,
you want to be not moral, but empirical. That's the empirical reality.
But in drug production. That may be true. But the problem is that where you started from, Colombia still has a very high rate of crime.
Then
it's been reduced.
Not compared to what
but
was.
You can't go, I mean, you can't
let me see if I can. Let me see if I can become the moderator.
There is no doubt.
Let's engage. I first have President Gaviria with a comment, and then back in Peter Reuters.
I have no doubt that Mexico will improve the whole system and will check the problem of security. I have no doubt that they will do it, as it has happened in Colombia. But what we need to be clear is that is not going to stop the flow of drugs. We will be able to check our security, and in Central America will be possible too. But that will not reduce the flow of drugs, as it's not happened with Plan Colombia. The numbers of the Biden report stopped in 2006 and were bad. But if you stop in 2008, the numbers are a disaster. And it's published by your office and the office of the United Nations how 2007 was a bad that year in the flow of drugs. Why eradication in Colombia? Aerial expression. Why eradication fail? I wanted to talk about 8 things. First, we had 8 states at the beginning, all in the Amazonian area. Yeah. We now have 24. In the Amazonian area, they did what they did in Brazil: one crops, two crops, and they need to move because the production reduces. But they moved to many other states. Second, they started to plant triple of trees, so they now have much better productivity. Not in the Amazonian area, in the other areas of the country, in the mountains, in the coffee areas. Third, they started to use small plots. It's much more difficult aerial expression. Fourth, they started to put a lot of, fertilizer. They started to put a lot more fertilizer, so they have better productivity. Fifth, they started to put a lot of food in the plant, so it makes much more difficult. Sixth, they invented a thing called guarapo, which they put it in the coca leaves, and then when you do aerial expression, it doesn't work. So they found so many ways. At the beginning of Plan Colombia, you needed to eradicate aerial expression three hectares to get one of reduction. Today it's almost 1 to 22. The U.S. is already talking about manual eradication and not using more early expression because it's not working. It didn't work. So that just shows that the idea that you can control the flow of drugs through eradication and aerial expression and all that is not working. It's not really working. Of course, the security of Mexico will improve, and I hope it will, and I am sure they will improve, but it will not stop the flow of drugs. Second, I don't think it's fair to talk about how what is consumption in the U.S. in the 80s. Yes, there was an epidemic in the U.S., and all families were involved, and it became a huge problem. But then came the 90s, and the consumption of the U.S. today is basically the same of the 90s, a little more, exactly. A little less, whatever, but it's basically the same. There has been no major achievement in the last 20 years or in reduction of consumption in the U.S. The consumption in Latin America is growing fast everywhere, from Brazil to Mexico to Colombia to Chile to Argentina. And the way of violence is related to the increase. And it's related to local markets, not only to international, to local markets. The violence of Brazil is local markets, and it's totally out of hand, and it's related to narcotics. Think, it's very strange, the coalition in Vienna this year. It's very strange. I'm going to tell you the countries that helped the U.S. to keep the language as tough as it is. U.S., Colombia, Iran, Russia, Japan, Cuba, and at the last moment, Italy and Sweden. But it's a lot of authoritarian at the Vatican. It's a coalition of authoritarian states more than any other thing. It's not, I mean, no Latin American countries were not on that. European countries were not on that. African countries were not on that. Asian countries, but of course, the U.S. is too powerful. The Europeans don't want to fight the U.S. on a matter that is not so critical for them. What to criticize of the Europeans? That very few countries give to this problem the priority it should have. Great Britain is okay, Spain is okay, Sweden is okay, but no one else cares. No one else cares, and they are doing nothing to reduce consumption. They are dealing well with the addicts, but they are doing nothing to reduce consumption. I want to talk a little bit also about LA Times citing President Obama when he was in the legislature of Illinois, saying the war on drugs, it's a failure. They cited him, they took and went and looked to a phrase. And I want to think about this. I mean, two of the last presidents of the U.S. consumed drugs. They could have been in jail instead of being presidents of the U.S. I'm talking about President Clinton and President. I mean, it's time to think. It's a good idea to take consumers to jail, because the two of the last three presidents of the U.S. have consumed drugs, and that is very clear. So they could have been in jail instead of being presidents of the U.S. President Obama was so frank that it didn't cost anything through the campaign. Nobody talk about that because he just published that in a recent poll in Colombia say that in the last year a little more than 500,000 people have consumed drugs, and in a longer period of time 1.8 million, and say I am asking the government of Colombia, what do you want to put in jail, the 500,000 or the 1.8 million when they talk about putting people in jail? It's just mad. It's just mad. I mean, it's impossible to keep. We cannot keep the prohibitionist policy, and that is the thing we are clear. In Latin America, we cannot take the U.S. policies as something that makes sense. And I do think we need to keep fighting narco-trafficking. I mean, we are tough, and in Colombia we are, and we are keeping our policy. But I want just to make the last comment. In the report, Biden says, for the 2007-2013, the Colombians are going to put $44 billion, and the Americans maybe $4 billion. So one in 10 are resources of the US, and the other 9 are resources of Colombia. And we will keep doing that, and I'm sure the Mexicans do. But we have one right to ask the US, hey, look at your policy. Look at your policy. It's not bringing results. We are doing our most. I mean, how many lives have been sacrificed in Colombia and in Mexico and in Peru and everywhere? But what you are doing, out of saying that you cannot change your policy and that that is perfect and is not.
I have no time and lots of hands. So let me take very quickly a few questions, and then I will give you all an opportunity to react. Peter Reuter in the back, please.
I want to go to Mr. Walter's comment about the success of Plan
Please
Colombia.
Please introduce yourself.
Peter. Sorry, Peter Reuter, University of Maryland. Mr. Walters talked about the success of Plan Colombia, and everyone agrees that Colombia as a nation state has been strengthened. However, it is also clear that the trend in terms of production of cocaine in the Andean region has essentially been flat for 10 years. It's been redistributed from time to time between Bolivia and Peru and Colombia, and there's a little back and forth. But as a drug control program, it's very hard to see any sign of success. Maybe it would have been higher if Plan Colombia hadn't been there, but you really have to stretch to get that conclusion. I was surprised that in the commission's report, the word eradication, as far as I can tell, appears once at the beginning of a sentence which says, eradication should be combined with alternative development. And I ask whether the commission really is proposing to continue high levels of eradication efforts, because I, like many other analysts, believe that this is essentially about redistributing production around countries and causing considerable environmental harm and probably, I think, even political damage to countries. And we'd be curious whether either President Cardoso or President Gaviria would be willing to address that. Thank you.
Thank you. Here, please. Tell us who you are.
Sean Hanley, Claremont McKenna College.
Stand up.
Sean Hanley, Claremont McKenna College. I have a question for Mr. Walters. Earlier you said you should look at the facts before you make policy recommendations. And I was wondering how you'd address the sort of stochasticity of price and purity of drugs in the United States since the 90s, building on Mr. Gaviria's comments. It would seem that there has been no great increase in price or decrease in purity, at least in the last 10 years.
Thank you. Over there, please.
Cristina Urelli. This is a question for Mr. Walters as well. As a Venezuelan, I'd like to question the success of Plan Colombia. I mean, undoubtedly, it's been a great success for Colombia, but what about, you know, the fact that one of the effects has been that the cartels have moved their activities to Venezuela, where they operate in open daylight with the acquiescence and the cooperation of the high-level Venezuelan government officials?
Here, please.
Thank you. My name is Sunny Shot with DPA. I would like to know if the panelists and also the member of the commission, they have a position regarding the drug policy of Bolivia, considering that coca leaf is not the same as cocaine. Thank you.
The gentleman in the back.
Hi, yes. Chris Moore with the Inter-American Dialogue. I had a question for Secretary General Insulza. Seems that people are regard rather highly the CCAD and the multilateral evaluation mechanism. I wondered what opportunities there were for multilateral organizations like the OAS to initiate further gathering of data, and what opportunities there were to enforce the findings based on that data. Thank you.
Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to give you a chance to elaborate, react to the questions and respond and add. And then I'll ask the presidents, because some of the questions are addressed to the commission, so I think it's fair to give you a chance to respond to the commission-specific questions that we get. Let me start in the reverse order. Then let me start with you.
Okay, Kat. Good. I guess I would like to take issue with Mr. Walters' last comment about murder rates in Colombia, because it's interesting and telling. I'm sure you're not saying that murder rates in Colombia are going down only because Colombia is eradicating a lot of hectares of coca leaf. Actually, the reason why it's going down is the story behind that is much more complicated, and it has to do with a lot of the things that President Cardoso mentioned. You know, as John McEnroe would say, I mean, you cannot be serious. That's the reason why it's going down. One thing I can tell you, one thing that Colombia is not doing is sending 500,000 people to jail for consuming drugs. Actually, if anything, they've introduced a measure, a very limited measure of decriminalization in certain aspects of their policy. So, and that's the real issue at stake here. That's what we're talking about here. So, I mean, I don't accept that that's the reason why murder rates have gone down in Colombia. And I'll leave it at that, you know, for the sake of brevity.
Well, I suspect I have some disagreement on the matter of murder rates in Colombia, but anyway, I want to refer to that just to answer the question. Well, we gather data from most of the countries of the region, from official statistics and all that, and we have a procedure for discussing that. This is a mutual evaluation. So we have a process by which we are certain the veracity of that data, and most of it is. We don't have any procedures to enforce the data. That's not our role. We haven't been given. We represent the results to the countries. We make a report. We tell them what we feel is wrong and all that. We have cooperation programs if they want to take them, but certainly there's no. This is not a procedure by which you can enforce certain conclusions on the member countries. No. I don't know. Jim Mack is there, who's the head of SICAD. He can give you more details on our evaluation mechanism, which is basically voluntary.
Thank you. Mr. Walters.
Yeah, I feel a little like that team that plays the Harlem Globetrotters, you know, that I'll resist that. But let me start with some of the basic points just in 30 seconds. It is, despite what you may feel, it is not true the United States locks up 500,000 people for just consumption. That's a cartoon. And I think this is a stubborn fact that has to be challenged. Most people that end up in prison for possession charges have pled down from trafficking or are violent criminals.
He said for drug charges. Not for
but that is not what he said.
I'm sorry.
I won't interrupt you. And I mean, I'll play, but you know, I get to dribble when I got the ball.
I'm sorry.
maybe I get to shoot once in a while. Most people that are in prison are there because they were also, if they're there for possession charge, they were a violent offender, and the possession charge is easier to adjudicate. When they were arrested for aggravated assault or rape or attempted murder, they maybe could intimidate the witnesses, but when they have the drugs in their pocket, the possession charge can stick in a difficult situation. These are technical issues that have to be examined carefully and are subject to distortion by both sides, I will confess, but I think if you look at them carefully, you'll see that the criminal justice system in the United States does what you actually want, closer to what you want the institutions to do in other countries. Colombia has adopted some of these diversion programs. Mexico is looking at doing diversion programs, all of which require the criminal underpinning and the law in order to get people help, as well as to take away those who would victimize them. Secondly, I do think that the blithe way in which what really is going on in Colombia has been treated, for those who want to really study this in the audience and elsewhere, deserves a better and closer look. Colombia has drained the money out of both the paramilitaries and the FARC by going after the leadership, going after the territory, and going after the drugs. They've extradited over 800 people to the United States who were serious drug traffickers, serious enough to be indicted. They enforce the law, and they've used the law against those networks. It can be successful. And yes, it can move around if you don't respond. Venezuela can respond. It's not doing it. Mexico is responding. It's not easy. In the past, Peru has responded. Bolivia is not responding effectively. Now, that cocaine, turns out, doesn't come to the United States for various reasons. That's just devastating for the southern cone of South America and will get worse, as well as to the people of Bolivia. Lastly, let me just say about the availability and some issue here about what's happened with production. Where we have systematically squeezed, I admit there has been some movement. But even in Colombia, and I know this is more contentious, and I'll label it as such, we have trouble measuring, and sometimes when we can't measure something, we say it's not there instead of we're ignorant. I think what we found, what the government announced last year was, the UN has said cocaine production and cultivation is down dramatically from 2002. We have not found those numbers to be as accurate as the ones the US government produces. But what we found was we weren't measuring it properly, because the eradication, when it attacked an individual field, and this gets into some technical matters, but the underneath the technical matters are the issue of does supply control work and does it contribute, which is an important matter. I would say if the FARC and the AUC were sitting on the money machine they were in 2002, they wouldn't be largely defunct now. But the fact of the matter is we were counting fields that were partially eradicated, which they would hang on to and try to cultivate. Colombia has changed its policy using manual eradication, where aerial only destroys part of a field, to take the whole field out. They have seen significant, where they have concentrated eradication, movement, and elimination. And they've been able to take that and hold that territory much more effectively. For the last 2 years, the best and most sensitive, not perfect, indicators we have of availability in the United States in terms of street price and in terms of actual estimates based on the biomarker of testing shows we've had a 2-year shortage of cocaine in the United States. It may be down as much as 50%. I believe that is the success of Plan Colombia and the interdiction efforts as well, and it contributes to what we do on demand reduction. The two go together. Now, I will confess that those are somewhat debatable conclusions on the data. But if you come to the data open, you might see that this is a much better and more successful story before you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Thank you, Mr. Walters. Mm-hmm. Let me ask Presidents Cardoso and Gaviria to give us some reactions to the questions that are specific to the Commission.
Well, I will be very short, because my experience is rather concentrated.
I have to ask you to stand because the camera.
Sorry, yes. Well, my experience is rather concentrated into what occurs in Brazil. And we are not a country in which the production is going up. The point with us is consumption. And also because of chemicals that are being sent to Colombia, so on and so forth. And as a matter of fact, the consumption is becoming a dramatic question because of the control of territory. The main question is the distribution and the control of territory. That's why we have these fights in mainly in big cities, and the most well-known is Rio, because some bands are controlling parts of the territory. And the governments try to deal with the situation, but the results are meager. And why? Because different reasons. But firstly, because we don't have a clear hierarchy within the police force. Nobody knows exactly which one of the different police have to take care of the situation. Secondly, because of corruption. And corruption is going up, not just in Brazil, but it's going up. Huh? So if you put together the lack of hierarchy, the lack of good training, equipment, plus corruption, it is extremely difficult to do other thing than a show to prove to the situation that the government is being active. And the show means to kill people. So the police force invade the area controlled by drug trafficking and kill. But they kill innocents or also traffickers, consumers, altogether. And the other day the newspaper announced, well, we are making an enormous effort to control drug, and the drug is expanding. And basically, it's marijuana, which is the main drug, and cocaine. Some data is always controversial. It's extremely difficult to have a sound set of information. But anyhow, it's also clear that if you look across life, the number of people who have experienced drug and keep using drug is not that high. There is a moment in time in life that people use drug and then it comes down, with or without repression. So the key question in terms of public health is those who are really addicted, not those who have experienced drug. Some people said that some American presidents did experience drug. No problem. I hope they are not continuing to experience drug. This would be a big problem, you see. But it's not just presidents. Everyone has this similar experience. The bulk of the population is not in a stable situation of addiction. So we have to concentrate in trafficking and on those who are addicted. So this is a health problem. The other one is a police question. So we are not praying not to repress, not to control. We are saying, well, let's distinguish. Let's do like Descartes. Yeah, to analyze and to see which are the elements componing the situation, and let's not use the same instrument to deal with different situations. That's what we are asking for. What we are saying about the criminality, the criminalization of marijuana consumption is that, well, if we put all these people in jail, it's impossible. We have not enough money to keep with the expense. And this is not being done in Brazil or in Colombia or in Mexico. I said before, we have legislation, you know, in some cases not very clear, and that's bad, indulging with the consumption of some kind of drug. Another comment I would like to have, a question has been raised about eradication and what kind of alternative to the crops in with drugs. Well, we have a very small experience in Brazil with marijuana. I remember once we made an enormous effort with the army, including the army, to eradicate a small part of Pernambuco, which is a Brazilian state. And we celebrate the fact that finally we eradicate completely the area. Well, the following year, again, maybe not in the same plots, but close to the area. In the case of now, in the case of the internationally speaking, I don't know if it is true, but some data shows that, well, it's true that, you know, the cocaine coming to America maybe is being reduced. But the replacement of cocaine by artificial drugs, by, you know, medicine, yeah. is increasing in America. So there is a replacement. Secondly, if you look data about marijuana, well, the domestic production in America is going up. At least some data are showing that in California, etc., there are crops of marijuana. So you are not being able to stop even in America. I'm not blaming because we are not also capable to stop in South America. So it's almost impossible to stop the production of drugs if we don't have a reduction of demand.
It's a different problem.
So that is the main question. Is it possible to reduce demand? We know that's difficult, and you know that's not enough to offer education. Mm-hmm. You said, I think it's all right, a combination between law and education. It's necessary. We are not saying, no, there's no more necessary to have any legislation about. But let's discriminate. What kind of legislation, what for, in which circumstances, and because I don't think that it's possible to offer in terms of a different pattern of productive pattern to replace the production of drug, because the price of drug, the market is so favorable to those who are producing drug. Look what is occurring in Afghanistan, which is dramatic. In Afghanistan, now again Afghanistan became the number one in opium production, in spite of the fact that the not just America but lots of troops are there, and it's impossible to stop. They again become very, very, very important. And why? Because of market. So let's deal with the market a different way. Let's reduce demand and not aiming at the reduction of production, having demand. That's the key point.
Thank you, President Cardoso. President Gaviria.
I have to confess one thing. I used to think as John Walters all the time, and work very hard with him. What happens is, through the years, I have discovered that the paradigm we were using is not working. The problem, yes, I used to think in the same arguments, we fought very hard. Colombia has done an extraordinary effort through the years. Mm-hmm. We have been successful in many things. We don't have the problems of corruption of police that are so critical and sometimes in Mexico. We have built a very well-used intelligence community that really works. We have improved our judicial system, but the problem is when you see the numbers of the flow of drugs through the U.S. from the Andean region, you get no results. You have to discover that that is a failed policy. We cannot stop eradication. No, we cannot stop eradication. I mean, that is part of policy. But the U.S. cannot expect that eradication of coca. Well, probably I have seen some U.S. officials already talking about manual eradication because aerial expression is failing. I mean, it's not working anymore. And the U.S. has to convince that everything depends on reduction of consumption. It doesn't depend on us. It will not depend on Mexico or Colombia. It shows that it's unstoppable the flow of drugs. He talks about increasing price in the last 2 years. I don't really know. I mean, nobody knows for certain. But it has always happened, goes up and down. There is a short period of scarce, and then a new flow comes. So I personally think the U.S. has to think if having high price is really a policy that works. It has to think if using more than two-thirds of the resources of the $40 billion in enforcement, law enforcement, and interdiction and jails, it's a good policy. It should start to think to move resources from there to treatment, and to look at the European experiences, not to oppose that Latin American countries or African countries use European experiences and try. There are setbacks. It's not very clear. Nobody knows about this Holland thing. I have heard that the problem they have is tourism. It's not their own consumers. They have no trouble with their own people. The trouble is so many people come out of France to Holland that create so much trouble that they are in trouble and thinking rolling back, but not because their own problems. There have been some successful campaigns in the U.S. The reduction of methamphetamines in California and Oregon in that side of the country because of a very good ad campaign when they started to show young guys and young girls that they were going to damage their teeth and should root the teeth. So it was very, very, very successful. It shows that prevention can work if used appropriately. It's like a tobacco campaign, but this was very, very effective. It was an extraordinarily good campaign, and it worked. So there are many things to do, and the U.S. really, nobody in the U.S. policy will not change from one day to the next. It will take a long time. But the U.S. should be ready to start to think that the policy is not working and it has to change. And there are many ways of starting to change without any dramatic thing. Nothing dramatic will happen. But policy should change, and I think after the results we have seen, I think it should change, and I hope it will start to change. And I am seeing that the debate is starting to come. No matter if politicians are fearful, I think there has been a debate in the U.S.
Thank you, President Gaviria. Kevin Casas, Jose Miguel Insulza, and John Walters have given us a fascinating conversation about a subject that has been with us for a long time and will certainly continue to be with us. President Fernando Henrique Cardoso from Brazil and President Gaviria from Colombia have also added their perspective from the point of view of the Commission on Drugs in Latin America and Democracy. So please join me in thanking all of them for a wonderful conversation.